Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the McCarthy Project live from Minnesota, where we have been attacking life and sport since 2001.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Stephen McCarthy, your host of the McCarthy Project, where we literally have been attacking life and sport since 2001. And today is a very exciting show, because we're going to be talking about the world of endurance sports. We have two guests on the show today. One is Judy Freeman, a professional cyclist who has just come back from Europe. And then secondly, we have Chris Swarthout, who is the actual USA triathlon coach for the junior division. And so we're going to be talking about new gear and life as an endurance athlete and all the cool things that happen right and all the cool things that happen wrong. So it really is a fun time, because I think so much of life is about working out of situations. You know, everybody wants everything to go perfect all the time. And we see it on the TV, or we see it on the day of the race, that everybody looks all together and things are going to go well. But things are happening and things change, and sometimes things don't go as we planned, and what do you do about it? So that's going to be today's show. I'm looking forward to it. We are going to go off to a quick intro song, as we always do, with Thistle, I Am Ready, and then we'll be back to talk with Judy Freeman.
They thought they was going to kill me with all their hate. Let them hoods go, baby. You can hate me all you want to, cuz.
Trick me,
only
perfect,
make me
perfect,
stronger.
Perfect.
You can't stop this, dog. You can't stop this. God's plan. And I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm free now.
I'm ready.
I got my mind right.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready.
And I got my war clothes on.
I'm ready for war.
They put a hit out on your boy and they left me for dead.
All blood in my eyes, thorns on my head. Only thing that I can hear is what my savior say. While I'm in my own blood and I can't feel my legs, but I'ma live,
I'ma live.
I will not die. Got up off the ground and I wiped that blood up out my eyes. Got my mind right, got my grind right. Stood up, now it's time to rise. Been resurrected,
resurrected.
I am alive. Blood drip, headed for war. Fire in my eyes. Ready for war, no turning back. I got my dog with me. 300 of us, young Leonidas. Take on the whole city. We don't retreat, we do not quit. We are not the same to live and die for the truth. Let's be plain, this is why I came. And if I were you, this dog, I'd probably hate me too. But the power that I come in is too big for you. So stop, don't stop it for me, for you go too far. My mind right, the time right, boy, and I'm ready for war.
Head to the sky, my war goes on, and I'm gonna fly till they call me home.
Yeah.
If I should die before too long, put me on a silver to carry me home.
I'm ready.
Amazing song, Thistle. That's you can get a hold of that song particularly at imthistle.com. It's imthistle.com. Amazing song. So, all right, we're off today to chat with Judy Freeman, who has just returned from Europe, has completed a couple races, but before we go into kind of some more, like, current, like, what happened, how did it go, what changes are we going to make, all those really cool cool thoughts. I've asked Judy to kind of share her story a little bit. And so, Judy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Cool. So you have returned from Europe just recently and back in the United States?
Yes. Just got back last Monday. No, Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning.
It always amazed me the difference in the changing of time, the time zones, how I've not done much traveling as a, you know, across major time zones, but I can imagine it's you leave on a Monday and you come back on a Monday, and I'm sure it just messes with the whole schedule for sure.
It can take its toll, that's for sure. Luckily, I've been sleeping well, though, this time, so.
It always is a nice thing. All right, well, you've been, let's just, before we go, like I say, too much into all the cool questions that I think a lot of people like to ask but never get to actually hear the answers to, talk to us a little bit about how you got started in cycling. You know, was it, did you just pop out as a baby with a bike and life was all cool, or did you kind of come to the sport late? How did you develop a passion for cycling and ultimately to be a pro cyclist?
Sure. I came to the sport late. I grew up swimming and playing lacrosse, and I got my first, like, well, I wouldn't say my first bike, but the one I got, I purchased myself when I was in college, and I just used that mostly for commuting. And then I went to CU Boulder. And then once I graduated, I moved to the mountains because I was going to become a ski bum. And the summer after skiing, decided I was up in the mountains, so I'd learn the local trails. And when I went in to buy a bike, obviously one that would actually handle handle some trails, the guys behind the counter, there were some friends, and like, yeah, you should hop in these local races and just as a beginner and have fun. And I hummed and hawed about the whole thing, and it was a thought, there's no way I could do this. There's no way I could race mountain bikes or jump in a race, and made a big ordeal out of it. And then finally just jumped in my first beginner race and had a great time. And from there, I'd say I was more or less hooked. I did take a year off. I thought I was going to go back to school, so I took a year off, and then decided I just actually wanted to stick with it. And I didn't want to go back to school, I decided. And then I decided I wanted to stick with racing. So I moved back to Vail, and after that just devoted my time to becoming a pro cyclist. Yeah, I didn't start racing until I was 25.
That seems to be a consistent, you know, because we've had a couple other women pro cyclists. We've had Christine McGrath and Amy Dombrowski, and it really does mm-hmm. seem to be a consistent story where – you know, you didn't, you know, wake up one morning at 6 and said, I'm going to be a pro cyclist. And, you know, at 12, I was already winning races and on the national team. And at 18, I decided to go pro, and it all worked out from there. You know, those guys, you know, both had, I'm trying to think of Amy's story, but, you know, Kristen for sure had injuries that caused her to not be able to compete at the sport that she originally was in, which I think was swimming as well now that I think about it. So it just seems like there is, you know, a lot of this idea that, I mean, when did you see that there was that you could actually make a living at being a pro cyclist? I mean, did you actually, you know what I mean? Or, you know, I guess the question, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I still kind of work, so I still work a part-time job to make all the bills, to make all the ends meet and make all my traveling. That said, my team is very generous, and the Crank Brothers Race Club and Scott sponsors, they really do take care of us. But in order to make all the trips that I want to Europe and to various races, yeah, I'm still working. But your original question was, when did I think it was possible? I don't know, but I started going for it. I started going for that level probably my third year. I was racing in the Vail, here in Vail, Colorado. They have a local series, and so I did that for a couple of years, and then jumped into a national, flew out to my first national, and I was an expert, and I wanted to upgrade to pro and go for it. Since my second year is when I wanted to become a pro cyclist. Like, I was hooked that early on.
That's it. But you were able to make a transition fairly quickly. I mean, were you an elite athlete in the swimming and lacrosse world, or was it something that, hey, I was average, you know, and I kind of did good, but not too good. But were you able, because you have an athletic background, to make the switch quickly? I mean, you think about it. I mean, 3 years is still not a long time.
No. I was fortunate to move up when I did. Hard sand. I don't know. I was I was a good athlete. You know, I swam and played lacrosse on the state level. So, I mean, I was above average athlete there. And then when I got into biking, I did well. I was succeeding in my first races, and probably that success drove me to go further. And then got in the pro ranks and sat in the back for a long, long time. But never gave up. I've been racing for 13 years now, and it's only been in the last maybe 4 or so that I've been hitting the top numbers. And in the last 2 that I've won, end of the last 3 that I've placed national podiums.
I have a strength coach background. That's kind of where we came from originally. But there's a lot to be said that in the endurance world, that as it takes a level of maturity, you know, to get there. It's not a sport like gymnastics, let's use the example of, where at 13 you're at your peak, you know what I mean? And pretty much you got 13 to 16, and beyond that, you know, you're really pushing the envelope, you know, to stay in the sport. But cycling and endurance sports are much more on the longer in the tooth. They're in the 28 to 32 range, you know, when you really start to gain the maturity. And it seems to be consistent again with your story. So what is the future? I mean, do you continue on? Are you, you know,
I'm going to keep racing until, so the future, like in general, or, I'm sorry,
yeah,
after
that? In general. After the season.
Oh, after the season. I want to race as long as it's fun, you know. Racing, I think anybody can attest to this, racing is, or competing at a high level is, it's hard. It's financially taxing. It's emotionally taxing. Huge benefits, huge payoffs, and it's in an environment that you probably love being in, but it's not easy, you know. So as long as it's still fun, I want to keep going with it. And right now I'm just focusing on this season.
I think that's a great point, too, because so many people on the outside look in, think sports is this, like, utopian world of just riding your bike around and enjoying yourself. And, boy, I wish I could do that. You know, you get to go here, go there. You know, they just don't realize that when you're competing at an elite level, how much effort it takes, how much planning it takes, how much money it takes to actually compete at that top level. It's just not a matter of, hey, dude, I've got this bike out here, and, you know, I showed up one day, and, man, I'm good, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think fascinating story. So.
Yeah, that said, I know how lucky I am and how fortunate I am to be doing what I do. So
amazing. And plus you have to have the discipline to stick with it. You know, so many people, you know, get on the other side and just say, you know what, you know, it's just not happening. You know, I don't see the end of the tunnel. I'll just give up. You know, it's no big deal. But I think that's great about what you're doing.
I'm surprised sometimes, yeah, but... I didn't have my best season until I was 38. So
that's amazing. Now, and then you're saying that 41,
39 and
42. Oh.
39. No, my best season was just last year. And yeah, there were many times prior to that where I was like, oh, I'm done. But I kept going, and finally started racing in a way that I knew I always could, and really excited about it, and so psyched to have had the experiences I've had doing it.
Now, let's go down this, because I know this next segment we're going to talk about this more, but let's talk about this, because, I mean, I'm going to just be real and be honest, you know, on this side, and say, to think that you're 38 years old and just had your best season, you know, most people, when they think about pro sports, would have, you know, given up when they were 25, 26, I mean, that general vicinity. Talk us through the mental decisions and talk about focus, you know, what does it take to compete when you're essentially the world is stacked against you almost?
Well, I guess I would say it doesn't for as much thought as I've put into that, I would say right now it takes the same focus that you've had before. You focus on what you've got, not on what you don't have. If you have any limitation, you train your weakness, raise your strength. So what I'm getting at is I'm not saying I don't because I'm so good at it, but I don't want to focus on I'm 39 and, you know, my competitors are, you know, 10 years on average, 10 years younger or something like that.
Yes.
I'll just focus on being in there and having my best race and knowing that I've done my best and have trained as hard as I can.
See, you know,
yeah,
so,
I mean,
so much
let age
below what you're,
you what?
I mean, there's so much below what you're saying as far as, because there's a good, I'm going to ask a specific question about what you said. You said you train your weaknesses, you know what I mean, and you make them, do you look to make them not a weakness, or do you just want to make sure that they go away?
No, just like you, you know, you work on what you need to work on. So if you get older and you need to keep doing more strength training because you're losing muscle mass, then that's what you do. I'm actually, you know, doing all right. I'm just, you know, talking about it with the age thing. But yeah, just generally, I think most people do that. You train your weakness and then you focus on your strengths when you're racing.
Fascinating. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll be back to kind of dig deeper underneath, because you mentioned three or four things that I think is cool. One is strength training. One is the ability to focus in a way that's different than everybody else. And so anyways, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll be back to kind of dig deeper underneath the story of how to be a pro cyclist.
Sounds good.
Kill me with all that hate. Let them hoods blow, baby. You can hate me all you want to, cuz it's only
perfect.
Gonna make me stronger.
Perfect.
You can't stop this, dog. You can't stop this. God's plan. And I'm ready.
I'm
free now.
I'm ready.
I got my mind right.
The heat out on your boy, and they left me for dead.
All blood in my eyes, thorns on my head. Only thing that I can hear is what my savior said. While I'm in my own blood, and I can't feel my legs. But I'ma live. I will not die. Got up off the ground, and I wiped that blood up out my eyes. Got my mind right, got my grind right. Stood up, now it's time to rise. Been resurrected, I am alive. Blood drip, headed for war, fire in my eyes. Ready for war, no turning back. I got my dog with me, 300 of us. Young Leonidas, take on the whole city. We don't retreat, we do not quit. We are not the same to live and die for the truth. Let's be plain, this is why I came. And if I were you, then dog, I'd probably hate me too. But the power that I come in is too big for you. To stop, don't stop it for me, for you go too far. My mind right, the time right, boy, and I'm ready for war.
Into the sky, my war goes on.
Well, good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we've been chatting with Judy Freeman about competing at a high level, you know, as far as elite performance. And I think one of the great things about competing at that high level is that you always think that change is good. Sometimes that you see this new fancy product or this new frame or new brand that's hot, you know, and you're going to switch over to it. And then things don't go as planned. You know, I've seen it in a lot of other sports where, you know, we'll just use tennis as an example. You know, they get a sponsorship with a different shoe company, and they decide to wear XYZ brand over the brand that they wore for 15 years previous, and they end up, you know, getting injuries and things of that. And so equipment changes are a big, big deal at an elite level. And Judy has just gone through one of those type of circumstances. So I've asked her to kind of talk about the changes and the motives and what she's learned through the process. And if you want more details once we get off the show, judy-freeman.com. She's kind of got the whole basics of her decision and why and what is it that she's tinkering with. So I think from that standpoint, Judy, talk to us a little bit about the changes that you made and why, and then talk to us about what happened, and then the second part, which is the tinkering to get it to work out right.
Great. Well, specifically what you're referring to was what I wrote about earlier, and that was a decision to change crank arm length. my team this year, the Race Club, we just got a new bike sponsor with Scott Bikes, and we're very fortunate to get in some incredible new bikes. And so what we were getting ready to run was a 29er, and now I'm also have the option of riding the new 27.5. And those are larger diameter wheels over the 26-inch wheels is what I was running last year. When we made this change, and it's kind of the long story, last year I was running a longer crank, a 175 crank, and I decided to go shorter in crank length. What we looked at was I was starting with the 170, and as we worked with the 170, I got a bike fit, and we were discussing it, and I was on the verge of doing better with a 165. Long story short, the shorter crank arm, the 165, there's a lot of studies that go on back and forth about it, but the idea is it would help you with your positioning on the bike, opening up your hip angle, and getting more power there, and also getting you up on top of the pedal stroke faster, so enabling you to go faster. So it was my decision fully. The option was put out there, and we talked about it. And I decided to go even further from the 170 down to the 165. When we did that, it coincided with a small muscle pull in my left leg. So the weird thing about everything happening was I was getting a new bike, new crank arm, had just had a small minor injury with a muscle pull, and it was at the start of the season. Those factors right there, just so anybody knows, that this was, again, my decision, and it was a poor one. I made way too many changes in a very short period of time, and I also did this just at the start of the season. I underestimated what my body could change or adapt to as quickly. And consequently, I'm starting in like late February, that small muscle pull turned into kind of a entire shutdown on my left side. And what we now figure out is kind of an SI joint issue. I'm not saying one led to the other, but what I'm saying is I think all the changes, the cumulative factors, maybe exacerbated the situation of what might already have been there. And so, long story short, I've been in pain for the last 3 months or 4 months. Obviously, my performance was affected by it. So, it was hard to figure out what was going on, though, because I had made those changes to the bike. I'd also had that injury, and so I wasn't sure if the injury was just on its own itself getting worse, or if I should stay off the bike, or if it had anything to do with the shorter crank arm length. I didn't know. So anyways, I had to start working with a PT and a massage therapist and a chiropractor, and we went back and forth. And long story short, I've now gone back to the 170 cranks and feel a lot better. Been doing PT and exercises, massage and chiropractic on my back to get that better. And within the last 3 weeks, I've been feeling a lot better. But so that's not to say that any one thing was wrong in there, like the 165 cranks. Those may still work for me. But I picked an inopportune time to, try to adapt to them in a very short period of time, and then B, also it just coincided with an injury, and maybe that wasn't the best thing to combine them with.
Yes, because I have a question for you, because one of the big things in endurance sport, I remember hearing a story of Lance Armstrong. You know, he had the same set of pedals for 10 years, even though there were many products that were a lot lighter, maybe more aero, yada, yada, yada. But he did not make a change on that particular thing because he felt comfortable there. And there's the question to be asked sometimes is that, is the science always, in your mind, trump the reality of feeling good? What do you think on that?
Well, my personal take is I would say no, probably much for the reason and we could probably surmise from Lance not changing with those, you say pedals or cleats, was it?
Pedals.
So the science may show that it's better. But in the end, everyone is different. Everybody's different. Also, you're not only different, but you've been training yourself in a specific way for however long you have. So now your muscles have become adapted to what you've been working with. It's a really important factor. Is just how you've been set up to work with your equipment, and how are you able to work with your equipment? So it's not just the adaptation; it's whatever your build is, it's going to be different. There's a lot that goes back and forth.
Because that is another question. Like somebody may have longer arms, shorter legs. And you talked about opening up your hips more, and there really are, in the world of cycling, so much information. You know what I mean? I think, I'm as an outsider looking in, and you've seen numerous pages upon pages of books about, just your foot position on the pedal, let alone, how what is your body composition, and do you have, longer legs, shorter, all that kind of stuff. How do you sort of process that information? Because you talked about making only 3 changes. I mean, 3 doesn't seem like, hey, I'm way out there. I need to change my whole training schedule, change who I'm, what events I'm going to, all that kind of stuff. We're only talking about 3. You know what I mean? How do you view change for the sake of change, even though after, on the hindsight, looking at it, saying, well, I only made 3 changes?
So are you talking with equipment or also training?
I'm talking in general now. When you look at it, you made changes in 3 things that really did cause a setback. Was that two?
Yeah.
You said it was too many changes. Could you have changed one? Could you have changed it in the off season? You know what I'm saying?
Sure. When it comes to equipment, It depends on what you're working with and how long it might take you to get a feel for it. For example, I just shortened my stem. I took the stem from 65 to a 55 millimeter, and within 2 rides, I knew it was a better option. It was handling a lot better, despite that we did the fit on the 65, and it looked good. I was sitting comfortably on it, but with the 55, I was able to maneuver it better. And I knew that within a couple of rides. So when it comes to something like that, I wouldn't say that was a bad setup. But when it is cumulative, it's thrown into your whole bike fit, then that's a little bit different. Also, it takes how long it takes you to adapt to that. There's a difference between a 165 and a 170 and a 175 crank. Some people will say, the difference between the 70 and the 165 wouldn't have been that much. But other people will say, that's a pretty big jump. I actually might have taken you 2 increments. So it depends on who you talk to. But what I might say on with the crank arm length, I think maybe if I had a couple months to really get a feel for it and have my muscles adapt to it, because it was also affecting my RPMs. So not only was like my whole positioning, now I was having to work in a different way. So there was a lot going on with that one particular change. So I guess to back it up to your original question, it probably depends upon the equipment part. And it depends upon how you're going to have to adapt to it, how long will it take you to feel for it. And then, yeah, I would, I guess, as far as hard it is to do, and you don't always have this option because you get a new bike at the beginning of the season, a whole bunch of stuff changes. you want to maybe isolate each change as you can go, because then you kind of know what are you working with. I think it's kind of a fine line because it's not always working that way, or it doesn't always work that way. You know, it's not always, oh, I can do this and it'll be fine. Because, you know, sometimes you have to make a bunch of changes at once. And that's kind of what, you know, came down to the wire when I was making the changes is, you know, I got my bike a little bit later in the season. But that said, now I've got my bike and I think I've got it down to a spot where I really like it. Yeah, I love it. It feels so good. Really excited about it.
Because I think the takeaway ultimately is, you know, you look at the world and you put as much science into it as possible. You know what I mean? But then sooner or later, mm-hmm. you know, there are so many variables in endurance sports that you take all the science and then you finally come, okay, this is the reality of the situation. This is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. This is the art form, you know, and this is what's going to make me most comfortable. And I'm glad you found it because I think it's not, I mean, I can only imagine what, you know, goes through a pro cyclist mind, you know, these small changes and the hyper technicalities of the bike needs to be exactly here, you know, and fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
So with that, we're going to go to, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll just say, let's go to a quick break again, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to go back into the mind games that you have to play when you're going through these changes and how you deal with setbacks. Because obviously by having last year being a great season for you, you obviously had high expectations for this year, you know, and you're coming in ready to roll. So let's talk about how you've overcome the disappointments to still move ahead. Because I think that's one of the big things that most people don't realize is that once in a while, as a pro athlete, you fail. And what are you going to do when you fail? And everybody wants to talk about when you're on the top of the moon. But when you actually fail, what do you do? And so let's talk about that after the break.
You got it.
Five Star Basketball, the leader in basketball instruction and camps. Endorsed by Michael Jordan, Dick Vitale, and Hubie Brown, and where the teaching never stops. Five Star Basketball Minnesota will be hosting a one-day instructional camp on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be hosted by Five Star, The McCarthy Project, and Grassroots Hoops. For more information on the camp, visit themccarthyproject.com/5-star. XL Athlete is the leading provider of online strength and conditioning and speed development camps. For more information on their training programs and speed development,